All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
This is Jim Fossone for VeteransRadio.net, broadcasting from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Enjoy our Veterans Radio interview with John Lee Dumas of Entrepreneur on Fire.
Welcome back to Veterans Radio on WAAM 1600 Talk Radio. This is Jim Fossone, and I'm very excited to have our next guest on. John Lee Dumas is going to tell us a little bit about his travels through the military, what he learned from his service commitment, and now how he's applying it in the business world. John, say hi to the Veterans Radio listening audience.
Veterans Radio listening audience, hello, this is John, and Jim, I'm prepared to ignite.
Are you all fired up for this interview?
I am fired up, my friend.
Good, good. Well, John, you first came to my attention in the Forbes article that profiled you this summer. Great article about you, and the thing that caught my attention is, wait a minute, this guy served in the military. So what? That's where I want to start. Tell us a little bit about Providence College and why ROTC, and sort of take it from there.
Sure. So I'm just a country boy, Jim. Grew up in the state of Maine and decided to go to college on an Army ROTC scholarship because Providence was the school of my dreams, but it cost about $50,000 a year. And I didn't want to come out of school with $50,000 in debt. Plus, I came from a family of military veterans, and I knew that was always a path that I wanted to at least check out and peruse a little bit. So,
tell us a little bit about the family connection, because I haven't read that elsewhere, but that was my guess, is that there's a family history of service to our country.
Exactly, yeah. Both grandfathers served in the World War II and Korean War, and then my father actually was in the service for over 30 years and actually was in JAG. And so I knew that that was something that I wanted to check out. So when I applied at 17 years old, you know, I was really interested in seeing what that was going to be about and got accepted and spent 4 years training as a cadet at Providence College, the Patriot Battalion.
And what did you get your undergraduate degree in?
American Studies and Political Science was my dual major.
And that really got you ready to go to your first assignment, didn't it?
Yeah, that really prepared me to go off to that first big assignment that I had.
So tell us what the U.S. Army decided you were eminently prepared to do.
So, you know, I was actually a senior in college during 9/11, which I know all of our listeners are very familiar with. And that made me the first class of commissioned officers post 9/11. So when we graduated in 2002, we knew that sooner than later we were going to be off to serve our country, and that was the fact. In September of 2003, I was deployed with Big Red 1, the 1st Infantry Division, to Iraq for a 13-month tour of duty.
And tell us a little bit about your tour of duty in Iraq.
So I was a platoon leader, Jim, of tanks. So it's called an armored platoon leader. So 16 men and 4 tanks was what I was in charge of. And we were stationed in the westernmost sector of the Sunni Triangle. So we were out in the Aramadi, Habaniya, and Tequadum area. And it was a really intense 13 months. You know, it was during the 2003-2004 very, very difficult and bloody time to be out there. Of my 16 men that went out there, including myself as a platoon leader, sadly, only 12 of us returned. You know, we, 4 of us didn't make the ultimate sacrifice, and including my company commander. And it was not something that a 23, 24-year-old was really prepared to cope with, but, you know, it was the reality of the situation, and It really made me kind of grow up quickly, so to speak.
And when you returned from the 13-month tour of duty in Iraq, talk to us about your continuing service here in the States.
So when I got back, Jim, I was a smack dab in the middle of my 4-year active duty requirement. So I was about year 2, 2.5. So I spent the next couple of years as an active duty officer based out of Fort Riley, Kansas. And I will say that I think that was good for a lot of reasons. Number one, it helped me reintegrate slowly back into the civilian world. Instead of just kind of getting plopped back in after over a year in a war, you know, I was plopped back, but it was still in a military environment for about two more years. And that helped slowly integrate back in. And plus, being in Fort Riley, Kansas, a lot of people may not know this, but the duty station is right next to Kansas State University. So I was able to get my graduate degree in finance while I was there, joined the water ski team, and have season tickets to the football game. So I was, you know, slowly able to see what it was like, you know, to be a college / graduate student again. And that really helped a lot.
It still must have been hard to adjust with the fact that four of your men died in combat. Was this a single incident or over multiple excursions out into the field?
It was over multiple excursions, which was difficult, and it was over the course of the 13 months. And you know, one of the very, very sad ones was that it was actually my sergeant, the gunner of my tank, was one of the ones that gave the ultimate sacrifice. And he had just left when his wife gave birth to their first child. And, you know, that was just difficult to know that, you know, here was now this child that was going to grow up without a father. And, you know, and I knew his wife, and, you know, she continued to update us, the entire platoon and company, you know, about the progress of her life and the baby and seeing that. And, you know, she was very strong, as was the family that came to support her. But, you know, it was definitely a tough experience to see the realities of what the Iraq war meant to people who served.
Well, I think those who listen to Veterans Radio fully appreciate the sacrifices that your mates made in this instance. And while the general public may not fully appreciate it, John, I want to let you know that you have our deepest condolences. We know a day doesn't go by that you don't think about them.
It is true. It is true. And I do want to make the comment also that I felt incredibly appreciated as a soldier while I was over in Iraq. I mean, the overall support that we got and, you know, everything that we did see was always, you know, even if people didn't necessarily support the war, they always seemed to support the troops. So we really had that vibe, correctly or incorrectly, while we were deployed, which is a really good thing that we had the support of the nation as soldiers. And that was really important. So that was a big thing.
As time moves on and you get to that point of deciding, do you stay in or do you get out, what was going through your mind, particularly as your father, who's a 30-year career officer in the JAG Corps, is looking over your shoulder?
You know, to be completely transparent, Jim, I always had the mindset that I was going to be four in and out. And I knew I was going to then serve 4 years in the reserves, which I did. So I served a total of 8 years, four active, four in the reserves. And that was always what I thought I was going to do. I did keep that door open of, you know, if the Army can convince me that it's worth staying active duty, then, you know, I'm not totally closed off to that idea. But I will say in 2006, we were right in the middle of deploying every other year to Iraq. So the decision wasn't too difficult to stay with my initial gut reaction, which honestly was made back in 1998 when I signed up that, hey, I'm doing this for a great ROTC experience to serve my country for at least 4 years and then in the reserves after that. And, you know, we'll see where my life takes me.
And you picked up your master's in finance along the way. What did you think you were going to do with that?
I thought I was going to get into finance. I did. I thought that was something that was calling my name. And I will say, after only one twist in the road, it actually did. And we can definitely talk about that.
Well, we have to talk about your try. What, one semester of law school, your dad didn't want me to bring it up. And as a lawyer myself, I know how hard that first year is, but most guys don't figure out it's not for them after a semester.
So that was that twist that I was talking about for sure. You know, my father's a lawyer. I come from a family of judges and lawyers, and I really thought that, you know, hey, I love finance, but, you know, I think that this is definitely, or I think this might be the path for me. So, you know, I took the LSAT, applied to law school, got accepted, and I went all in, Jim. I mean, I got accepted to a great school in Rhode Island, Roger Williams Law School, which was right next to my alma mater, Providence College, so I was kind of back reunited with my college buddies. I bought a beautiful place right on the bay, overlooking the ocean. I was in. I was hook, line, and sinker, and then the first day of law school happened, and I just had this weird sinking feeling that I never had before, that I am committing to the wrong path. And, you know, I'm stubborn like most military officers, so I wasn't willing to give in at that point because I had committed a lot of finances, time, and plus my family was really expecting that I was going to be this successful lawyer down the road. So I did stick with it for a full semester, and I busted my hump. I mean, I got done with the first semester with all A's and B's on all the finals, and it was a huge shock to, number one, hand my father my report card and have him see all A's and B's, an A in contracts, Jim, can you imagine? And then to basically, with my other hand, open it up and say, Dad, sit down, I have to talk to you, and tell him in that moment that, you know what, law school is not for me. I'm going to India for 4 months to try and find myself, and I'll stay in touch via email.
And I think it's important that we're going to talk about one little bump, another little bump in the road before you get to Entrepreneur on Fire, a couple of career changes. But I think it's important, John, for folks to understand life's not necessarily a straight line. And as you transitioned out of the military, you had to try a couple of things, didn't you, before you found what your passion was?
More than a couple things and 6 years, Jim. Like, it wasn't like, I'm going to try this for a month, try that for a month. Okay, this is me, and now it's off to the races. It was 6 years in multiple failures and false starts and really both financial and emotional setbacks, you know, before Entrepreneur on Fire came into the picture.
And so you tell us quickly about your stop at John Hancock and your stop in real estate before we get there.
Sure. So, you know, I get back from India. You know, I was trying to find myself out there. I came back knowing that I didn't, but I was in a Bollywood movie while I was out there, which was pretty fun. But I'm like, you know what? Now it's time to put this master's degree in finance in order. And I joined a financial firm in Boston called John Hancock, and I was there for about 18 months. And, you know, it was actually a job that when I first started, I was very grateful to have because the economy was starting to go into the tank at that point. And so I felt very blessed to have that job because I wanted something to really sink my teeth into. And I worked my butt off. I mean, I came in there and I immediately rose to the top of my division in the sales department within John Hancock. And I was, again, enjoying it on a lot of levels, but kind of like law school, like I quickly ran out of steam. Like I was sprinting, I like to say, towards success, and I got exhausted. And, you know, I started showing up at that cubicle out of energy, out of steam, no longer being able to be that top sales guy, that person that made the most phone calls, that talked on the phone longer than anybody else. I started, you know, really being like, you know, this isn't for me. I can't see myself being here much longer. So I'll never forget, Jim, and I'll make this quick, but, you know, we had just laid off 70% of our division, and I was really the only person with tenure of under 3 years that was not cut. So I was, you know, I should have been excited that I made this round of cuts that the entire, all the financial industry was going through. And the CEO of the company standing up, giving the entire John Hancock division a lecture about, you know, how we need to all come together. If we don't want to be here, we need to walk out the door right now because, you know, we owe it to the company to be 100% in. And I had to be honest with myself and say, I'm not 100% in, and I can't pretend like I'm not. So I quit that day of that grand speech by our CEO. I walked into his office with a form letter of resignation. You know, they tried to throw more money at me because they really saw me as being somebody who's going to take one of their divisions to the next level, and it just wasn't for me, and I stuck to my guns, and I walked out with no job and no destination.
Well, Veterans Radio listeners, you can see that when John gets involved, he gets all in, and after this short short message from the sponsor, we're going to get to what he's doing now and what he's all in and fired up on. So we'll be right back. So welcome back to Veterans Radio. We're talking John Lee Dumas. I'm Jim Fossone. And, John, you've gotten out of the Army. You've tried a number of jobs. It's about 6 years later. And one day the light goes off. You should move from listening to podcasts to actually going into the podcast business. Tell us about Entrepreneur on Fire.
Sure. Well, absolutely. So, you know, after that stint in finance, I was in real estate for a number of years, and that involves driving cars a lot. So, you know, there I was stuck in traffic, listening to podcasts as a way to try to inspire myself to actually find something that I was excited about. And I just ran out of podcasts. Like, there was no more podcasts of the types that I liked that were interviewing successful and inspiring entrepreneurs and share their journey. So I did my research, Jim. I went and I searched, and there was no podcast that was coming out 7 days a week interviewing inspiring and successful entrepreneurs. Most of the shows were coming out one day a week, and I knew that was a void that needed to be filled. And I decided to quote Gandhi here, to be that change that I wanted to see in the world. I wanted a 7 day a week podcast. I knew other people must want that too. I just had to make the decision to go all in and make it happen, because it demanded you going all in, because it's a lot of work. So I quit my job that day. Again, I don't hesitate. You know, I don't like to mess around. And I was off to the races. I hired a mentor. I joined a podcast mastermind, and I started my journey of creating a 7-day-a-week podcast. And here we sit, Jim, a couple of years later. Entrepreneur Fire has over 800 episodes published. We've won Best of iTunes Award, and we are consistently generating close to 1 million unique listens every single month.
Well, I'm one of your listeners, and I can vouch for it to our audience. It's a great podcast. Talk a little bit about what your target market is. Who are you trying to reach, and what message are you trying to instill?
So the audience, Jim, that I'm looking to reach are entrepreneurs, current entrepreneurs, are wantrepreneurs, people who are looking to, like me, break out of that cubicle or that uninspiring job and really take control of their own life, of their own destiny, or small business owners, you know, who have made that leap and are currently running a small business, but they know that they need some tips, tools, tactics that are working right now for other successful entrepreneurs and want to learn more about that. So that's my target market. And, you know, it's an audience, Jim, that's very specific, but at the same time, you know, Entrepreneur Fire gets downloaded every single day in over 145 countries. So it really shows that it struck a nerve, not just with people in the U.S. or North America, but with people who are looking to take control of their lives all over the globe.
John, I know you've spoken to a number of entrepreneurs who have who are veterans, who have military backgrounds like you do. Do you think veterans make good entrepreneurs? And if so, why?
I think veterans make the best entrepreneurs. I might be a little prejudiced, but I truly believe that. And there's a number of reasons. And a couple specific ones that I really want to touch upon are Parkinson's Law and Pareto's Principle, both of which I learned while I was in the military, and both of which I've used to apply to my current entrepreneurial journey. Now, Parkinson's Law, Jim, is that tasks will expand to the time that you allot them. So when we were deploying to Iraq, we had 6 months to deploy with a unit that simply would have taken over a year to train, equip, and get ready to go. But hey, we only had 6 months to do it. So guess what? We set up a training schedule. We only allotted half the time to everything that we typically would have. And guess what? We got everything done that needed to get done. So I realized, and I've applied this to my entrepreneur on fire career, is that I just allot narrow time frames to work that I have to get done. Your brain clicks into another gear when that happens, and you get stuff done. You know, everybody can remember in college when you had to pull that all-nighter. Well, guess what? You somehow got it done. That's Parkinson's Law working for you. And Pareto's principle is that 80% of your 20% of your actions result in 80% of your desired outcomes. And that is absolutely a mind-blown for me when I realized that, wow, I can focus on 20% of the activities that result in 80% of my desired outcomes. I can forget about the other 80% that I don't even, you know, that aren't even producing the outcomes that I want anyways, and really focus on what needs to get done. And those are two things that I learned in the military, Jim, that I see a lot of people, a lot of veterans, are able to apply that mentality to their business.
And you've spoken and posted, I think you said 800 or so podcasts at this point. What makes a good podcast?
What makes a good podcast, Jim, is a story that connects with the listener. So I have successful and inspiring entrepreneurs on my show. And one of my big concerns at first was, when I have the Tim Ferriss and the Gary Vaynerchuks and the Seth Godin's on my show, are my listeners really going to connect to them and really feel like this advice that they're getting from these successful entrepreneurs is applicable to them? Because there's such a gap, such a chasm there, which is why I make my guests tell a story. And I start with a story of failure, because I want them to know that Tim Ferriss, Gary Vaynerchuk, Seth Godin, that all of my guests have fallen flat on their face, have failed time and time again. And what that does is that makes the listener realize, hey, I connect with that story. If Seth Godin failed multiple times and now he is what he is, you know, maybe that's okay that I've failed before, or maybe it's okay that I'm going to fail in the future. So tell that story to connect with that listener.
John, when you set out to create Entrepreneur on Fire, were you a digital guru at that point? What in the world gave you the idea that you could accomplish this?
I was the opposite of a digital guru. I had no online presence whatsoever, no Twitter account, Facebook fan page. I was starting from ground zero on that. I had no broadcasting experience. I had never interviewed anybody before. I had never been behind the microphone. But what I did, and this is so critical for any entrepreneur and any part in their journey, I found somebody that was where I wanted to be. I found a successful podcaster who was having the type of success that I wanted for myself. And I reached out to her, and I asked her to mentor me. And, Jim, it was an investment, and it wasn't cheap. It was thousands of dollars a month. But that investment has obviously proved to be a great return on investment, as in 2014, Entrepreneur on Fire generated over $2.5 million in revenue, over $2 million in net revenue. So investing in yourself is incredibly important.
When you look at the lessons that you got out of the military, John, and you look at the success you're having currently, do you see more lessons that came out of that helped you achieve where you're at today?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the lessons are endless. And one thing that I really like to stress when people ask me, you know, John, like, who's your mentor now? And I love saying the answer that all 800 plus of the people that I've had on my show have been my mentor in one way, shape, or form. And the relationships that I've built with them, Jim, those have been priceless. And I've learned the pricelessness of relationships, because every single day, Entrepreneur on Fire goes live with a new guest. That guest has a large audience. So when I email my guests with all of the links to share Entrepreneur on Fire with their audience, and I make it easier for them to do so, every single day my podcast is getting listened to by a brand new audience. So I'm building my audience by adding value to my guests and then being able to leverage their audience every single day. So it always comes back to relationships, Jim. That's the biggest takeaway I can share.
Do you still maintain any relationships with your former Army buddies?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, interestingly enough, I started a company. I'm one of three co-founders of a company called HighSpeedLowDrag.org, where we, you know, have a weekly podcast where I interview a veteran and we talk about their journey. It's another podcast. And then we also hold webinars every month where we just share things that we've learned. You know, one guy is a Marine, Antonio Centeno. Another guy is an Army captain like myself, Tom. And we are all successful entrepreneurs that are just really spending our time because it is not a basically for-profit situation at this point. We're just doing it because we want to give back to the veteran community. But I really enjoy it.
So give me that again. It was High Speed, Low Drag?
Yep, .org, O-R-G.
Well, I think that's a great takeaway for our audience as well to pass along. Either use themselves or pass along to family members who are in the military or working their way out and looking at the civilian world and thinking, well, what do I do and how do I keep the motivation? The drill sergeant helps you get the motivation in the service.
That's exactly what the website is created for. It's tons of free content just on that.
So let's talk a little bit about how folks can find you, John, follow you, connect with you, that sort of thing.
So all the magic, Jim, happens at eofire.com. I obviously own the domain entrepreneuronfire.com, but entrepreneur is kind of a tricky word to spell, so I make it easier with eofire.com. And, you know, for anybody that's just into what you and I are doing, you know, connecting with our voices, I offer a completely free podcasting course for anybody. It's 15 days, 15 video tutorials at freepodcastcourse.com.
Well, John Lee Dumas, I was interested in when I first read the Forbes article on you and what you were doing. I've listened to your podcast, followed you a little bit, and you're a great example of American entrepreneurism, a great example of people who take what they learned in the military and apply it to real life. And I really appreciate you being on the show.
It has been such an honor, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Listeners, we are coming to the top of the hour. You know what that means. I want to encourage all of you to check us out and like us on Facebook if you haven't done that. And you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.